Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This is CBS. I am the world. I'm John Batchelor. The light of battle. Michel Paradis is the author of Eisenhower D-Day and the Birth of the American Superpower. Ike has had 10 days at home dealing with George Marshall, FDR, and Mamie, his wife. He's now back in London and is headed to central London because all the commanders in chiefs of all the services combined, British and American, are now going to gather around the Supreme Commander. And they have X number of months to prepare something that nobody's ever tried to do, put together two armies and invade a third or fourth army. That would be France and Germany. France is not resistant, but then again, de Gaulle is, so it counts almost as an adversary. However, what is important, and Michel has already introduced the character, is Kay Summersby. Kay Summersby is Eisenhower's driver since 42. He took her to North Africa. Kay Summersby is a model. She's a beauty, an Irish beauty. Everybody who sees her, in fact, I've had stories about that night before the D-Day, where Kay Summersby was driving Eisenhower around to meet the troops, including the 101st Airborne, who were very bored and tired and didn't want to meet another general until somebody came running in and said, there's a real looker with him. And so they all ran out and gathered around Kay Summersby. She's a woman who at the time stopped soldiers from walking past them. Okay. Kay also drives extremely well, especially in London. And Michelle treats us to the drive she takes Eisenhower and his good aide, Butcher, they call him Butch, Butcher, through London. Please tell this story because it tells us everything about their relationship.
Yeah, it's a wonderful moment. So Eisenhower, as you mentioned, returns after a sojourn briefly in the United States, where he's, you know, just bombarded, and then has to take what it turns out to be a well over a 24-hour journey back to the United Kingdom. But because of the notorious English fog or smog, really being even worse than it normally is, he ends up having to land in Scotland and take a train all through the night, which doesn't get him into London until about 12 o'clock in the morning. And there waiting for him is Kay Summersby, as you mentioned, his driver since he arrived in 1942, and probably one of the closest people to him in the war. I would actually say, you know, I mean, there's a lot of speculation, and there's a lot of, frankly, prurient interest, not the least from people like FDR, in the sort of romantic character of the relationship. And there's been all sorts of, you know, writing and speculation primarily about that ever since. But I found their relationship profound. Primarily, you know, irrespective of whether or not it had a romantic dimension, but she is just the closest person to him because she's really the only person he can really trust in what is otherwise a jar full of scorpions. Even the people who are his closest allies, including people like Harry Butcher, right? As soon as it looks like he's about to be shipped back to the United States, Harry Butcher starts looking for a new job while assuring Eisenhower to his face, oh, for sure, I'm going to stay with you, boss. Don't worry about it. But they arrive in, you know, a complete dense, you know, impenetrable fog in the middle of January. And this is during, you know, the blackout. There are no streetlights and you can't see, you know, more than 5 feet in front of you. And Kay greets them. And, you know, when people call her his driver, right, that seems to it sounds in some ways trivial, but. How she got that job was she ran ambulances during the Blitz. She drove ambulances, which required a, you know, sophisticated geographical memory of the winding streets of London, and the ability to drive them both quickly and in the dark. And so in this dense fog, in this pitch black, absent fog, Kay greets them warmly, welcomes him to London, and drives them both to the office and then ultimately to the manor house. Just in the dark, as if blindfolded, right? No one can see anything outside of this car, and everyone is just completely quiet, white knuckling it, in fear that at any moment some lorry might come barreling down the street and just kill them all. But she does it. She pulls it off, and she does it with, you know, a kind of an ease and a charm and a grace that, you know, with so much on his mind, with so many worries and, you know, and that's sort of one of the striking things to me about the, that I uncovered in the course of researching the book. Just so many things that we don't even think about now were weighing on him at all times. And she was just this easy personality, who could make him feel comfortable, make him literally feel safe, even when driving, in pitch black.
I called her Irish when they were together. Now, why I wanted that story told is because Kay Summersby stole every scene she was in for me. Every scene. It's almost as reading a novel as opposed to a history. Whenever Kay shows up, something's going to happen. She drives a great big Packard with flags on the front. But we go to a meeting. Within the next days, Eisenhower, now Supreme Commander, calls a meeting at room 126 Norfolk House. And gathered around the table are the commanders in chiefs of the invasion, which initially was scheduled for May 1st. That's what they're thinking in their minds. I want to go around the table momentarily so we meet some of these personalities. Beetle Smith, Arthur Tedder, Burt Ramsey, Trafford Leigh Mallory, and Tui Spats. And, of course, Montgomery's present. Let's start with Montgomery. Just quickly, what is his job right now? What was he given, Michelle?
So the initial plan was to have an American sector and a British sector, and the British appointed Bernard Montgomery to lead the British and Canadian part of the invasion. And this was, to put it mildly, a thumb in Eisenhower's eye right from the beginning. Eisenhower had requested a different commander, Harold Alexander, who it ends up, the British end up keeping in the Mediterranean. And Eisenhower and Montgomery have a notoriously acrimonious relationship to this point. But Eisenhower also understands Montgomery's talents, his genuine talents as a military planner and as a general. And also, you know, getting to some of the points we were talking about with, you know, with FDR and what FDR saw in Eisenhower, he also understands that having Monty on his side is going to be essential if he's going to keep the British behind Operation Overlord, behind the invasion of Normandy, which Churchill, at least, and most of the British chiefs of staff opposed pretty much throughout the entire war up until the Cairo Conference. So Bernard Montgomery is a difficult figure that Eisenhower bring, you know, bear hugs into his command. You know, moving around the table, Trafford Leigh Mallory is a British commander, the only he's an airman, fighter pilot, actually, but he's the only individual who had actually been involved in the early planning of the D-Day operation in the United Kingdom. He is a tireless worker, a meticulous planner, and he also drives Eisenhower completely crazy because he's one of those people, and we all know them, who are sort of the reflexive trouble spotters, who's always sort of just pointing out, you know, how bad things could go without necessarily offering any solutions. It gets to the point where Eisenhower's blood pressure is getting out of control and his doctor recommends, you know, having a stiff drink in the evening and minimizing his exposure to Trafford Leigh Mallory. But then going around the table, you have Bertie Ramsey, who is the naval commander. He's something of an eminence grease at the table. He had been a career naval officer, had actually participated in the Gallipoli landings, which loom like a dark cloud over the D-Day invasion, is responsible for the coordinated British evacuation at Dunkirk and is ultimately chosen by the British to lead the naval contingent. Arthur Tedder and Beetle Smith, I'll just talk about them together, are basically Eisenhower's two closest aides, Beetle Smith being his chief of staff, in his longtime chief of staff, and Arthur Tedder initially being his air chief and then becoming his deputy, who are two people he can just really rely upon for their judgment, for their ability to have a good throwdown, knockdown argument with him when they think he's doing something wrong, and who he can really trust to both be loyal and extremely competent, which is always, you know, any leader will tell you is the most hard, most difficult combination to find. I'm trying to think if I've forgotten anyone going around the table.
Tui Spats, the man with the big villa. Yes.
That's right. Tui Spats, the man with the big villa and the even bigger ideas, is the head of the American Strategic Air Command, which was created in the United Kingdom to join up with the British Air Bomber Command under Arthur Harris. And, you know, that creates its own problems, as I'm sure we'll talk about, because he has an entirely different vision of how to win the war. The big strategic bombers are kind of see the D-Day invasion as a distraction from their efforts to imminently win the war by bombing alone. And so, yes, there are some extremely large personalities, all with their own, you know, visions of how to win this war, that Eisenhower has to now navigate and bring together, and try and point all in the same direction, which is no small task.
The book is The Light of Battle. Michel Paradis is the author. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.